You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
This is Teachings in the Air with Sahil Thit. Today's podcast is called Memory Lane. No memories that get triggered when you go to places or you hear things. I went to my home territory, Stadtlium territory. On May the 10th, I went to the Stadtlium gathering at Squaloch. Every year on May the 10th, Stadtlium people gather to commemorate the signing of the declaration of the Lulawit tribe, Aspensis Bridge, on May the 10th, 1911. A declaration that states that we had not been in a war or sold or gave away our territory to anyone. Basically saying that's ours to use, to occupy. So it is a 112-year anniversary. I was there and I see friends and relatives, leadership of the day. And I ask myself, where are we now after 112 years? You know, I pondered on that and I said to myself, well, Sahil Thit, the most important thing is that the Stadtlium people know the truth about the territory, that we know that that's where our people hunted and gathered for thousands of years. So that's where I was on May the 10th, Squaloch, beautiful Marble Canyon, where they had the gathering. Good work by the Squaloch people. But my memory lane triggered or kicked in on May the 11th. I stayed in the town of Lulawit with the crew in this hotel. And of course, I see where I walked and played and worked in the small town called Lulawit, which means in our dialect, wild onions. Anyway, I woke up as usual, 4:30 in the morning, in this little hotel room, and I started writing. It's when I write, usually is early in the morning. Or if not early in the morning, one of my habits is to go to Starbucks to write. Anyway, I was writing in this little hotel room. And of course, I started to feel, hey, I'd like to have a cup of coffee and maybe something to eat. So I got up and went out onto the streets of Lulawit and walked the town. And all the restaurants I come across, they're all closed. And they weren't going to open till 7. So I walked down to the train station, you know, back uptown. And bought myself a cup of coffee at an Esso gas station. And I remembered that's where the Royal Cafe used to be, a Chinese restaurant And that was my first memory of the town of Lulwit. Coming on the gas car, the way we get to town was what they call the gas car. You know, and it was it could carry cars and passengers, a small little transportation system on the railroad. We call it the Pacific Great Eastern Railroad. I remember coming to town, my granny would say, sat at that tayhem. She'd say it, she'd have a sparkle in her eye. She'd be excited about going to town. And I got that excitement too. And that's the first place my brother and my cousin went into the Royal Cafe. And that's the first hamburger deluxe I had. And the owner says, okay, hamburger de-la. He was a Chinese man. So that's one of my first memories of the town of Lulwit. You know, my memory goes on. My next memory was coming back from the residential school on a bus. Oh, excited to come home, to be home, to have good food, to be with my family, you know, and it was a big event for me. It was excitement. And I remember, as we're coming to the train station, because we're going to catch a train there to go home to my community. And I see friends and relatives in the streets of Lulwit. And some of the adults were quite intoxicated on alcohol, staggering and disheveled. I could feel a bit of my energy go down. A feeling of shame. And people come up to you and they're happy to see you, but they smell of alcohol, you know, and it's not a good space. You know, I was 13 then at that memory. And I remember getting on a train and one of the adults, the train was moving, jumped off the train. I can only, we're thinking it's a suicide attempt. He was a Second World War vet and probably had PTSD. Anyway, I was watching this, what people would call partying or using alcohol. And I'd say, that's never going to happen to me. I'm never going to be an alcoholic, you know, I'm not going to be a drunk, you know, not going to drink cheap wine, drink in the jungle. And I said, that's never going to happen to me. And I, you know, would go back to the residential school. And, it, you know, it's sort of weird. I don't have any other memories of coming home after that year of, I guess, feeling down and out. But it's at 13. That summer, following summer, I started to drink alcohol with my cousins. And I was thinking about that as I was thinking about this podcast. My number in residential school was 13. You know, so after I left there, of course, I hit the bottle and I started doing drugs, you know, and I crashed and burned. And, you know, one of my next memory is I walked by the old police station in Lulwit, and I remember starting that day, I come to town on a train and I see friends and we end up in the jungle, Sagebrush Hotel they called it. We're drinking cheap wine and whiskey. And I passed out, and I woke up, and I was all by myself in the jungle. So I got up, and I went to the first Indian bar, they call it. And there I see friends and relatives. And I get to be drinking again. And I remember I asked for to borrow money because I was hungry and I wanted to eat. And I blacked out, and they said that I ate and I was drinking, and I had a nice cowboy hat on, and I walked out the door and I put it in somebody's head. I said, "Here's a gift for you." And they said I walked out the door and nobody seen me after. Well, what happened is I went into the alley there and passed out in the alley. And luckily, the police found me, RCMP. They took me to the drunk tank in the jail. I woke up in the drunk tank. I got frightened. I said, "Oh, what did I do?" Because I had no memory. What happened? Anyway, early in the morning, police officer comes and opens the cell door. "All right, come on, we're letting you go." They weren't going to charge me with anything. I said, "Oh, okay." And they give me my shoes and my belt and my wallet. And I said, "Where's my glasses?" And they said, "Oh, you didn't have any on when we picked you up." I said, "Where'd you pick me up?" And they said you were passed out in the alley between the Lullwood Hotel. That's where I was staying too this year when I went back and the memories kicked in. That's where I think it started to happen, this memory lane. I said, "Oh yeah, you were passed out in the alley," the police officer says. So they let me out the door and I walked over to the hotel. Walked up the alley and I looked right beside the wall. There's my glasses. Oh, I was happy because I'm lucky. They didn't break or somebody take them. So I was becoming what I said I would not become. It would never happen to me. And that lifestyle carried on till I was 27 years of age. And I, like, yeah, people with addictions, I became sick and tired of being sick and tired, and I come to. And part of it was I got introduced to the spiritual path, indigenous spiritual path, which I'd always, or not always, but I was interested in that. I was curious about how we used to live. My uncles would tell me about the Nkalza, the sweat lodge. Anyway, we're supporting our community around fishing, one of our communities, Lilawat. They were doing a road blockade about fishing rights. So I was working for the band and with summer students, so I took them to the blockade. And we were met by the security there, and they're indigenous guys with long hair, you know, and they'd have different beads and things on, you know, and they were cultural. And they stopped the truck. I had a crew cab with my crew in there, high school students. And he says, "Do you have any weapons? Do you have any alcohol or drugs?" And I say, "No." And he says, "Well, you all get out." So we all got out and they checked the truck through our camping gear and everything. And they then finally, "Okay, go on. You told us where to go, where the gathering is," and we drove down there and set up camp. And they had a sweat lodge there, a big sweat lodge. And this Cree man, healer, medicine person from Alberta, was hosting the ceremony. I wanted that. So I went to that ceremony. And that man was so kind, you know, and he thanked us for being there. And I remember we're sitting there, it was hot and it was dark. And he says, "You relax now. I'm glad that you're here. And for many of you, it's your first time in ceremony. Don't worry. You can do nothing wrong here." He says, "I'll be praying in my language. I have an interpreter here. He'll let you know what I'm saying so you understand." So he's putting medicine on the grandfathers, he called them, the rocks, the red hut. Oh, this wonderful smell comes through the air. It's medicine. And he sings and he prays. And, you know, there's four sessions in a sweat ceremony. That means they open the door four times and get more rocks into the sweat lodge. Unless they have a bear sweat where they take them in all at once. I believe this one was a bear sweat. Put the medicine on there. But I remember it. One of the rounds he was praying. And he was weeping. And the interpreter says he's praying for his grandchildren. He's worried about his grandchildren. I was sitting there and I could hear him and I was listening. And I said, "I want what this man has." So that was the opening the door to a spiritual path, a spiritual way of life, of taking care of my spirit. Was a sweat lodge at a blockade, at activism. So I was coming too. Then, of course, you know, we go home after a while and back to my community, and there's no sweat lodge there or man or woman running any. So I turned to the next thing because I was coming too now. I was waking up. So I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remember I go there and people introduce themselves. "Hello, my name is so-and-so. I'm an alcoholic." And they come to me and I'd say, "Oh, hello, my name is Jerry and I'm here to support you all." You know, I was in denial. "Oh, glad you're here. Keep coming back." They'd say, that's one of the AA things. "Keep coming back." So I kept going back, and I remember that time, the first time in my life, I disclosed, I acknowledged, I confessed. I said, "Hello, my name is Jerry, and I'm an alcoholic." And it was such a wonderful feeling of, you know, just like a release of, like something was held down and it sprung free. That I am an alcoholic, that I have problems with alcohol, my life is unmanageable because of alcohol. So that's, I come to with that. And then I built my own sweat lodge and started using sweat and using medicines, making teas, you know, and doing hand drum music. And then I was working in the town of Lulwit after I left my own community. And I was working for the alcohol and drug program for the Lulwit District Indian Council for five communities. So there I am. We all know each other in Statliam territory. Our age group anyway, so there's one guy there. He says, "Yeah, let's start a powwow." I didn't know what powwow was. But he had a drum, a floor drum, and he started teaching us how to sing. And I remember that feeling I was singing with a group. Because an important part of fighting addictions is to join a group. Don't do it on your own. Find a group, whether it's AA or a cultural group or something where they don't drink. So this is the one. And I'd build a sweat, and we'd have sweat, or we'd go to someone's sweat, you know, and it was good. And we'd eat meals together, and we started traveling together, you know, and singing together. So that became my strength then. And I was working for the people. And I also, around those times, started getting into politics. I became chief for my community, you know. And, you know, eventually I worked for a tribal council. In 1990, the Oka, they call it the Oka crisis. And crisis means turning point. People from Ganastatagi, they're going to build a golf course on their graveyard. So they stopped it. So they put up blockades and started happening at Quebec. So we put up a road blockade in support of the people back east. One of our chiefs, great man, he said, I just can't sit by anymore, because he's seen them burning indigenous people, effigies of indigenous people, hanging them and burning them. He says, after I seen that, Jerry, he says, we got to do something. I said, okay, I'm with you. So we blockaded the road. He blockaded by himself first, all by himself. Went to jail, and me and the other chief went to liberate him, and we got him out, and then we set up another one right away on the road in a different community. And we moved from that community road to the railroad near on my community. Because on the road, the people were turning against us, the citizens, the Canadian citizens, because logging trucks were stopped, you know, food trucks, you know, bringing in groceries for the stores in Lulwit, you know, everything coming into Lulwit is stopped. So we realized we're not against the people. We want the government to recognize us, to acknowledge our title of our lands, our territory. So we moved to the railroad because it's a provincial corporation. You know, it was... And that's where we end up. And that's where we feel empowered, proud to be Stedlium, because we're standing up for ourselves. Then that, you know, eventually that stopped. And we all got arrested, packed us off of tracks. And while that was going on, it was escalating back east, you know, and the army moved in on their blockades, and we had people over there, so the chiefs I was working with said, let's go get our people. So we traveled back east. So we were activists for change. And it was well planned, you know, and we tell the people, you don't talk to media. There's only two people talk to media. There's two chiefs. There's the only ones. And we don't swear. We don't drink. We don't do drugs. We don't give them an excuse to be mean to us. And we had meetings, and they said when they come to arrest us, if they do, we'll just lay down on the tracks, and that's what we done. I remember that day they came in with buses with cages in them. And they filled up those buses. They packed everybody off the tracks. And me and the two chiefs went to jail. And we said, we're not going to they said, if you sign a paper that you won't do this again, we'll let you free. We won't charge you. We said, no. And then they said to come in with a fingerprint kit, and they said, we're going to fingerprint you. And one of the chiefs says, no, we're not criminals. Why are you going to fingerprint us? We're not criminals. You know, so they left. And the people eventually liberated us. They surrounded the jail, and they let us out. It's after that we went to Montreal. So that was a memory lane for that town of Lulawit as I walked the streets of Lulawit. I remembered that. I was proud of all those people that stood up for our rights. We all become one. We're all one. People from Penticton come and support us. And there are three Statlium communities. And we're doing ceremony at the same time. You can say we're spiritually governed and spiritually guided. So that memory was the last memory I had that morning, walking the streets of Lulawit. I walked by the tribal council office, and me and two of the chiefs are sending out faxes all over BC. No cell phones those days, you know, we're sending out faxes for support. And there are people stepping forward to support us in what we're doing. Canadians and Indigenous, letting us know they're with us. So after that, I leave the territory and I start working for other organizations, still in addictions and then cultural work and cultural advisor at British Columbia Institute of Technology, working for a residential school survivors society, different organizations, and I consulted too. It's there I started to see that our biggest losses were, number one was identity. How to be Indigenous 24/7. Loss of identity and loss of family structure. We became all trauma victims. And when you're a victim, you live with anger, fear, or depression because you've been wounded. Like when we're angry, somebody hurt us. And we haven't dealt with it, we haven't let it go, and we carry it, and then we get angrier. It's just like a seed growing inside of me when I was angry. And of course, I'd have depression at my lot in life. Why me? And I have fear in my life, anxiety. That's not a good way to live. And it seemed like it is a life without support or help. Where do I go for help for anger, for depression, for anxiety? And I, you know, there are people that would go and they get medication from the doctor, tranquilizers and stuff. I didn't go that route. I don't know why. Maybe no one told me. I don't know. So I started to be aware of it. Because I, you know, I became working for the people. So I started working addictions programs. And I could see and hear and feel the serious mental health problems that were happening with our people all over